Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio.
Earth Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio. Sorry about coming to you a little late tonight again. A little bit of technical difficulties, no problem. We're used to it. We're doing internet broadcasting. The solar wind tonight, 402.4 kilometers per second, but it was a stiff 660 kilometers per second earlier in the week. The result was a surprise aurora. Hope you got to see it. There are no sunspots again. Comet Lulin is sporting a million-mile-long tail of cyanide gas. If you can see it, get out tonight around midnight and maybe you can spot it. The future may be a foamy sea of crystals. Each crystal holds a miniature program that can run on its own once we access it. As it turns out, prophets, seers, and revelators have accessed the larger crystals over the millennia and tried to warn us of things that may happen. If they don't happen, the rules say they're really not prophets. But is that fair? Prophecies are really conditional predictions that depend upon the consciousness of the human race. If we plunge forward unconsciously, we may very well access the very crystals of prophecy lying there in space waiting for us. But if we awaken and realize there is the ability to create in each of us, then those crystals of doom and Armageddon may be a beautiful sight out the window as we pass by in peace and hope with an endless future of growth and evolution. Wake up, Earth Explorers. Yesterday, we suggested that the gaseous ion tail of Comet Lulin had been torn away by a solar wind gust on February 23rd. That may be, but another phenomenon is at work too. The ion tail is at least partially hidden behind the comet's head as the comet swings past Earth. Rapidly changing geometry will soon bring the unruly tail back into view if needed. It's there. Stay tuned. We'll bring you more. Have you been wondering why Comet Lulin has two tails and why one of them disappeared on February 24th just as the comet was passing Earth? Well, the nucleus of Comet Lulin spews a mixture of dust and gas into space. Quickly, the mixture separates into distinct tails. The gaseous ion tail is pushed straight away from the sun by solar wind. The weightier dust tail resists solar wind pressure and aligns itself more or less with the comet's orbit. The second tail is completely hidden behind the head of the comet. Nothing to fear. It may be out of range before the tail reappears. Next year, if Comet Lulin maintains its course through the solar system, it might be much closer to Earth's orbit. We'll keep you posted. The European Space Agency, ESA, on Friday named a Frenchman and a German who will join four Russians in an innovative 105-day isolation experiment to test whether humans can one day fly to Mars. From March 31st, the six crew will be locked inside a special facility in Moscow that replicates conditions of a space trip to Mars. The simulation will be followed by a 520-day experiment starting later this year that would last as long as a real mission to Mars. The distance between Earth and Mars varies between 55 million kilometers, that's about 34 million miles, and more than 400 million kilometers, that's about 250 million miles. Using current rocket technology, a there-and-back trip to the Red Planet could take at least 18 months. Using current rocket technology. How about that? Last week, our guest was Ariel Ford, talking about her best-selling book, The Soulmate Secret, and the spokespeople for the Skyships over Cashiers in North Carolina. It was an interesting night of discovery, Earth Explorers. If you missed it, you can listen at your leisure by simply subscribing to the archives at xsquaredradio.com. For less than the price of a cup of coffee per month, you can have a full year of unlimited listening pleasure. Tonight, our guest is the scientific spokesman for the Raelian movement. If you haven't heard the case for intelligent design, this might be your night for discovery of what it's all about. My first guest is Ricky Rohr. The book that I was asked to read for tonight's interview is called Intelligent Design, A Message from the Designers. And for the last hour and a half, our guest will be Dr. Mehran Sam, who is the second spokesman for the intelligent design case. Both of these men are excellent spokesmen for the Raelian movement. Please be prepared to be carried beyond your imagination. Please welcome with me Ricky Rohr. How are you, Ricky?
Hi there.
We're coming to you from the frozen wasteland of western Idaho tonight. And I got to tell you, in reading this book, I was completely fascinated. Just a completely in-depth, easy-to-read, and fully informative story.
It's very easy to read. Yeah, very, very simple, to the point. No fluff.
Oh, exactly. I guess, kind of prime everybody and get everybody going. How did the first contact occur to start the Raelian story?
It was December 13th of 1973, and a man in France, he was about 27, 28 years old, was driving to work one morning, and had a sudden urge to stop at like a state park. It was an extinct volcano. He was on his way to his office, decided to pull off just for a minute, and when he got out of his car, he saw a ship come down, a UFO. It's something he'd also been fascinated with, but never really read anything about. And 6 days in a row, this being that he met came back and talked to him for about 1 hour each day. The first day, he asked this Frenchman, who now goes by the name Raël, and he asked Raël to come back with a pen and a paper and a Bible. And Raël did that every day for the next 6 days, and he was dictated a series of messages by this extraterrestrial who said that they, this race of extraterrestrials, had created humanity. They were mistaken for gods. They even wanted to be mistaken for gods because they saw that they had created us very intelligently, very, very intelligent, excuse me, that they had sent all the great prophets like Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Ezekiel, Elijah, Buddha, about 40 prophets, men and women, throughout the ages, and that they created us through a combination of science and art. Through a mastery of DNA, through a mastery of genetics, they created us from the ground up. Many times the media like to purport that the Raelians claim that we were cloned. We weren't. We were created from the ground up, from inert matter, through a mastery of genetics. And, of course, in harmony with their artists, you can see the beauty in life that covers this earth. There's so much beauty from the colorful fish, the crazy dating, dancing, mating rituals of birds and things like this, and the beauty throughout the creation. So they had created us through silent with their artist, and they would like to come back, but they won't come back unless they're invited. So that's why they contacted Rael in 1973 to spread this message, and number two, to build an embassy to welcome them back. They would like to come back to their creation, their garden, their children, but they won't come back uninvited. This is how much they respect us. They treat us as individuals. They don't treat us as children. They let us grow and evolve for these thousands of years on our own. As I'm sure you and your listeners are aware of the stories of, like, the Greek gods, the Sumerian gods, the Roman gods. It was plural, plural, plural. And indeed, they are plural. They are called Elohim of the Bible. And the Bible is said on the first day, Elohim did this. On the second day, Elohim did that. The word in the most ancient Hebrew means those who came from the sky. It doesn't mean that the singular translated God. So the context has been deeply changed throughout the centuries. I kind of call religion a 5,000-year telephone game. Especially in ages where there wasn't, we have so much communication now with television, with, computer hard drives, video, and everything else. And back then, people at best had, some sort of primitive paper to write on to keep records, and to hand stories down by word of mouth. So we have a great advantage now to keep more accurate records. And your listeners and you are surely aware that the winners of the wars always write the history. Like another great author, what's his name? Lawrence Gardner wrote that myth becomes the truth and truth becomes the myth. So this book that you just read, Intelligent Design, for me too, when I first read it, it's like, this is amazing, because I was highly skeptical when I first heard of it. Heard about it, because I still kind of believed in a God, or very much, actually. And I set out on a little trek to try to prove Rael wrong. And in my research over the next 3.5 years, month by month, I just kept on compiling evidence to support what he was saying. And like you said, the book is so clearly written, so simple. I tried to read your answer book and things like this too during my research time, but 2,000 pages and just so much mysticism. I found it interesting, highly interesting, as I found a lot of things, but I kept coming back to Rael's book because it just is so clear and simple.
Well, now the beings, the Elohim, they were human beings like ourselves who cared deeply about us, or what, it was here that they first discovered and developed their own genius for transforming life from planet to planet by their mastery of DNA?
Basically, yes. They started to create life on their planet, little primitive forms of life and some animals and stuff. And they, just like Earth is going through now, the public was against the creation of intelligent life. Even when they had created on their planet some animals. One of these animals had apparently broken out and killed a couple of people. So that really started a movement on their planet against the creation of artificial life. So eventually they got permission to create life on a different planet. And they created life on several planets. We're not the only one. There are two others that they've created humanities on.
Now, our best molecular biologists concur that DNA is an engineered molecule. Now my experience has shown that people lose their way when we try to think human DNA is an original invention or something that happened by accident. Can you make an effective case for the evidence that shows that human DNA is a construct from other DNAs around the universe?
You're talking to the wrong guy there. I'm not a scientist. I'm more of an artist.
Okay. Well, we'll bring that.
Moran, who's coming up for the second half of the program, is indeed a PhD and indeed works in genetics.
I will save that question for him then. You know, when I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm always surprised by who shows up. I mean, the guy staring back at me is not the being inside of me. The being inside of us is not original to Earth. Where did we come from?
Well, that's an interesting question because there are a couple of different ways to approach it, for me anyway. We are dust. We are simple atoms, magnesium, zinc, copper, iron, hydrogen, and oxygen, arranged in such a way, thanks to the genetic code, to be the human beings that the Elohim created us to be. Now, just as you can take bricks and make them in the shape of any shape of building that you want, whether it's an igloo or a pyramid or just a cookie-cutter homes in suburbia across the country, or adobe shacks or anything, you can use those bricks and make a structure in any shape that you want. And it's the same for the DNA, for the genetic code. The genetic code just commands certain molecule or certain atoms. And again, Miranda is going to be better to discuss this with than me. I don't know if I'm approaching your question the way you wish.
I think I understand, you know, what you mean as far as the body, but I mean the animated being that makes up Ricky, the person that's inside all that magnesium and calcium and protein and water. Don't you kind of feel like you've been around a lot longer than just the time you've been here on this world?
Well, I see where you're going a little more clear now. Thanks. What the Elohim explained to Rael is that there is no soul. The equivalent of the soul is the genetic code. Now, everyone does have access to eternal life, but they said that they did not create us with a soul. But the primitive men, when the Elohim were trying to explain to primitive men that, yes, you have access to eternal life, the primitive man couldn't understand what a genetic code was, what genes were, what DNA was. They couldn't even understand what a flashlight or a book of matches were, much less concepts like genetic codes. So when the Elohim were explaining to our ancestors, these primitive men and women, that there is access to eternal life, these primitives couldn't understand, so they equated it to a soul. Even in the Bible, where the word soul is used, I believe the original word was ruach. And for example, a verse that would say, I was taken up by the mountain, or I was taken up by the Ruach to the mountain. Ruach, if I remember right in my research, literally meant a wind or a blast or a violent exhalation. Only in a figurative sense did it mean a soul. So the breath of life and all these things don't have the same contextual meaning as they did 2,000-4,000 years ago. But to answer your question, the Elohim said, no, they did not create us with a soul. But this connection that you feel, this connection that I feel when I look in the mirror and through meditation, there is a link between us and all life in the universe if we just access that portion of our brain. And the word religion itself originally meant to link, to connect. So when we feel that link with everyone on Earth, with everyone in the universe, with everyone throughout infinity, because infinity, you have the infinitely large and the infinitely small, that is a profoundly religious experience.
It's interesting. So, I mean, it's clear to the most casual, at least scientific observer, that humans did not evolve here on Earth. There's just far too much stuff in our DNA that isn't used on this world. It appears to be left over, as it were, from somewhere else. So what did the designers have in mind by transforming mankind here?
they were satisfying what was genetically programmed into them. A procreative instinct, if you will. On their planet, it's a very, very advanced society. To avoid overpopulation, you know, people can only have a certain number of children. Many things which make this society a couple of notches above our own. But they still had procreative and had curiosity. They were programmed, like we are, to be intelligent, to be curious, to seek to understand the universe in which we live, to seek to understand matter. So, just like we do, the same reason that we forge forward and research genetics or stem cells or the atom or quarks or everything, or art, everything. We were programmed, they created us literally, just like the Bible said, in their image. So we have those same curiosities, that same drive to endeavor to understand that which we are part of.
Very interesting. So how long did it take to create all these life forms? I mean, assuming that they came here to a planet that basically had microbial life only, and they found enough material to start with so they could make an organism that could at least survive here with some intelligence and some sentience, how long did it take them to create all the life forms on this planet?
When they arrived, the planet was covered in water. Again, just like it said in the Bible, and they raised one huge land mass, the original continent. And they put seven laboratories on that continent. They have seven races, seven provinces on their planet, so they had seven teams of scientific creators working with artists, as I mentioned. There was no life on this planet whatsoever when they arrived. Only water and the land underneath the ocean. So they raised that continent, they put the laboratories in place, and they started creating simple little vegetable cells and more complex cells. Eventually, you know, the reptiles, mammals, and eventually man in their image. Now, they had to create an atmosphere, of course, and terraform. Had many, many things to do. So this took, you know, a few thousand years. They didn't say specifically how many thousands of years, but they started their work about 22,000 years ago. And they created mankind about 13 or 14,000 years ago. So we're looking at about 8,000 years.
Interesting. So now are there other forms of humans in the galaxy that the Elohim have put in place?
I think they're in the same galaxy as us. They told Rael, it's in the book, that they had also created two other humanities. First of all, they had some, you know, not all of their experiments were successful. For example, they said there's even a world full of plants that still exists out there, because the equilibrium wasn't quite right between the plants ended up kind of taking over on the planet. But they did say specifically there are two other humanities, so they had three successes, us and two other humanities, and they even said that it's possible that one of these humanities will contact us.
Interesting. So now, do the other two, do they all breathe oxygen, or are they made of different things for different worlds?
They didn't say.
Interesting. And now you say that there's no soul, and yet, you know, all these beings are interconnected somehow, and I guess we'll get into that a little bit more into the hour. But is it possible that there is some kinship, some brotherhood and sisterhood between the beings that are on this world and maybe beings that are on other worlds?
Well, surely. if for no other reason, for the fact that we were created, certainly these three humanities were created by the same creators, the Elohim, and furthermore, yes, the Elohim say that any civilization that reaches the point we have, we come to a point in our civilization where we either overcome our aggressiveness, we master our aggression, or we destroy ourselves and start back over again, as Buddhism talks about in a progression destruction cycle that repeats itself.
The consciousness that makes up the intelligence in each individual, if they, in effect, don't get it right, or they don't awaken, or they don't reach a state of consciousness, then they get multiple lifetimes to get that right.
Yes, but what the Elohim specified is that it doesn't apply to the individual, it applies to the humanity, the whole of humanity. And each person could be considered one cell of humanity.
Okay. Do they ever move life forms that are compatible from world to world, like birds or fish or microbes or algae?
I don't know that they didn't say anything specific on that.
It just seemed like it'd be more efficient. You know, you have one size fits all algae that'll work on all worlds, then it makes the terraforming a lot easier. The reason I ask is, when I visited Hawaii, I was told by a kahuna that the dolphin is not an ancient inhabitant of Earth, but rather a recent addition. And I guess
I remember reading stories of that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the follow-up question is, are the designers continuing to introduce life to various worlds?
I don't have a good answer on that, because they didn't say specifically one way or the other. So the best answer I have is I don't know.
Okay. In the book, Message from the Designers, it says that we are in a competition of sorts with the other worlds. How does that work?
Exactly. Yes, those two other humanities that I told you about, the Elohim really didn't say much about them at all. They just told Rael that they exist, and that we are in a sort of competition with those humanities. And right now, it seems that we're doing pretty well. You know, but there are so many variables, so many possible variables there that, you know, one has to stop thinking about it sooner or later. Because, for example, you know, did they make us all three humanities the same intellect level? I don't know. Did they give a leg up to one of the humanities and not a leg up to the other? I don't know. There's just too many variables to answer that question well.
Well, you imply, at least what I'm gathering from what you're saying, is that there are plenty of intelligences in the universe to go around, to embody.
Infinite.
Yeah, so I guess it wouldn't hold any water that it could be that, well, say, I have lived and died on other worlds, and now, because either that world no longer exists because its sun exploded or whatever, I'm given a chance to live here on this world.
Are you still referring to like a reincarnated soul type of life?
Well, yeah, like an intelligence that lives on with the same personality, as it were, from being to being, or from body to body.
I'm not sure I understand your question 100%.
Well, I mean, let's say they had four worlds, and one of the four worlds, through no fault of the beings on that world at all, either through a life-ending asteroid or a cataclysm of some kind on that planet, or cosmological cataclysm, life is extinguished on that planet, and those beings on that planet didn't get a chance to live out a full existence. Are they given another chance on another world to fulfill their lifetime?
By the Elohim?
Yeah.
Given the chance by the Elohim, do you mean?
Right.
Or some sort of larger cosmic law?
Well, those are your questions. I'll go with them, sure.
I'm just trying to understand the context.
Well, the context is, I guess, fairness. You know, what happens
when,
you know, one intelligence is given a chance to live out a full life and reach the fulfillment of their existence, and another one, through no fault of their own, has that existence cut short.
The best way, I think the shortest answer would be no. Sometimes things just happen in the universe. And in fact, they never met their creators. As you may have read in the book, they had also had creators. The Elohim had creators. And they didn't even know that they had creators until an automated ship landed on their planet carrying basically the heritage of their creators. All the scientific knowledge, all the culture, all the benefits of their creators' society. They never met their creators. And specifically, you know, they're in the book, they said it's possible that the sun exploded or their planet just became inhabitable, but they never met their creators. They seem to have disappeared. So,
sort of like a time capsule that comes in and fills in all the historical blanks for them.
Yeah, it was programmed to land on their ship, on their planet, automatically if something happened to their creators. So that it was, you know, that their creators ensured that their creation, who are our creators, would benefit from all their knowledge.
Very interesting.
According to the Elohim, there is no like justice system, you know, for someone whose life is cut short. The same thing would hold true for people here who die too young. And of course, we all feel that we all die too young because life is beautiful, and we want to take part in it as long as possible.
Even in its challenge, it is so.
Let's talk
a little bit about the encounters. After the first encounter and the first book coming out, what was Rael instructed to do?
The first book, he published in 1974, as I told you, the encounter happened in December of 73. Rael was instructed to do two things. Number one, to inform the public as to who the Elohim are. And that is a big, big mission. Because most people, you know, our society is still based in a God belief system. And especially monotheism has a difficult time with the idea that there could be creators but still no God. The word atheist really gets a bad rap. So we are atheists. We believe in creationism, but we are atheists. But I digress a little bit. Sorry about that. Rael was asked to inform the public, and to, number two, build an embassy to welcome them back. And that's it.
Okay. Well, I see from the book that he had some challenges and was provided a means to move to the country during this two-year period, and in this he had a fear of leaving the spot where he had had his encounters on the volcano. Did the Elohim find him after he moved?
Yes. Yes. And he actually had a second encounter in his new location in October of 1975, on October 7th of 75, and in fact, they took him to one of their planets. For about a 24-hour period, where he actually met face-to-face Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, and had dinner with them, did meditation sessions with them. And he spent about 24 hours there seeing amazing things. He even saw a clone of himself that they created for him right in front of his eyes. And he saw some amazing things, the animal life, the colors of the oceans, thanks to the plant life that was underneath the water, traveling in the air by strapping on a belt, and be transported kind of like an in-air sidewalk that transported through the air to the destination. He couldn't. He himself says he was like a primitive man trying to understand what he was seeing. But those are the things that he recounted in the book.
I think I want one of those belts. That would be very cool.
<Yeah.
laughs> So, let's see if we can hang in here just a little bit. There are some technical aspects to their teachings that I would like to know about. For instance, the suggestion, and this is kind of cool because we're really seeing this unfold right now, the suggestion that we consolidate our currencies into one currency, and that this is happening right before our eyes.
Exactly.
How is this being done in accordance with the Elohim suggestion?
Well, are you proposing that they have something to do with it, or are you just proposing?
Well, either that or they're just really good at predicting, but, you know, somehow, you know, what
yes.
they designed back in the 70s is unfolding
it's the latter.
Right before our eyes.
It's the latter. I mean, this is the mark of a prophet. The word prophet comes from the Latin meaning he who reveals. And the Elohim said, yes, in 1973, that a world currency would be necessary until we can abolish money for good. And it's, like you say, it's happening before our eyes, you know. Nation after nation, their currencies collapsed. The euro created a continental currency. The same thing is now happening in the States. They'll eventually create an Amero. So we'll have, you know, six or seven different currencies, and the same thing will happen again, and we'll create a world currency. And then the last step will be to abolish money altogether. And it could be done so easily if we allow science to work for humanity instead of humanity, you know, to be enslaved by older, outdated beliefs. Most religious paradigms want to impede scientific progress because they think that we're messing in God's domain or something like this. So it's the fear of the unknown. It's the respect for life, you know, for the creators. It's well rooted, but it's misrooted.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, whether we're talking about Copernicus or Einstein or you know, even modern science, you just don't have access to capital. You don't have access to governmental support unless you tote the, and I'm just going to call this the religion of science. If you don't tote that line, you're not going to be supported.
Yes.
You're not going to be affiliated or aligned.
Yes, and you're exactly right. And people need to realize that it's the scientist and the artist who foresee the future. Not like looking into a crystal ball, but they can imagine the future. They build the future upon the future instead of building the future upon the past and repeating the mistakes. Unfortunately, the masses aren't able to see that vision. So whether it's IVF or whether it's Copernicus, like you say, or the polio vaccine or blood transfusions or anything, they were all resisted by the masses because the masses could not foresee the future.
Well, I have maybe one point of fact, and maybe it's not the masses that reject it. I mean, in our travels, your travels and mine, we meet literally hundreds of thousands of people that are like-minded, but they're also not in positions of power. So maybe it's not the masses, but it is the controlling faction, which is a huge minority. I mean, our country is controlled by 435 congressmen and two executives in the branch, and a judiciary made of 13 men and women that control everything. And really, they control everything in the free world. They control what money is allocated. They control what curriculum will be approved and what drugs will be approved. I mean, everything goes through these few individuals. So it might not be the masses we're talking about at all.
Well, I agree with you. At the same time, I still subscribe to the idea that if the masses would inform themselves better, they would vote in different people to power and eliminate a lot of that. And as you probably read, the Elohim recommend a type of democracy called geniocracy, in which only intelligent people could be voted into office. And intelligent implies IQ and EQ. And it wouldn't just be, you know, some people would argue that Hitler was intelligent or that Mussolini was intelligent, and they weren't. They were clever, they were manipulative, but they were not intelligent because they didn't apply certain principles of love and humanitarianism and things like this.
I think one only needs to turn C-SPAN on for a couple of hours, and they'll be convinced that there's utter stupidity within the walls of Congress.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, poop in, poop out. You know, we get what we get, we vote for.
Well, that being said, you know, really intelligent people are not going to go to Washington and work for $136,000 a year. That's not survivable wages in that city.
I respectfully disagree. I think someone who's truly intelligent would see the importance of serving humanity and not making a lot of money. The most brilliant scientists in the world go without grants, like you point out. You know, the most brilliant artists do the same thing. They don't do it for money. They do it to create.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But speaking of serving, let's serve one of our callers. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, Dr. Agnew.
Hi.
This is Mark from Ohio.
How are you, Mark?
I'm doing real good. I had a few questions for your guest. However, I've forgotten his name.
Ricky.
Ricky, okay. Hi, Ricky.
Hi.
I have studied the Raelian movement a little bit, and I think it's kind of interesting. I had a few questions for you. Could you tell me how far away the planet of the Elohim is from Earth?
A little less than one light year, as they state in the book. And that book is a free download on our website, by the way, if you'd like to read it in full. They say that their planet is a little less than one light year from our planet.
It's really that close, and we haven't observed it through telescopes or anything like that?
It's possible that we saw it in a telescope, but there's lots of stuff out there. I mean, even the telescope's not going to, you know, show the cities and things like that. It's possible.
That's fascinating. I wondered if you had studied any other of the UFO cases, like the Billy Meyer case. Have you ever read about that?
Yes, I read about the Billy Meyer case many times in my first years of research, and it's still provocative. I don't know if it's true or not. I wasn't there.
Do the Elohim believe that there are other races out there visiting the Earth right now?
It's an excellent question. I heard someone ask Rael that specific question about 6 or 7 years ago. They asked, are we being visited by other races? Rael said, and he hesitated for a second, he said, I don't think so. He said, I think the Elohim would tell me if we were being visited by other races. The Elohim did say, however, in the book, that one of the races that they created might be contacting humanity fairly soon. And this was in 1975, or 76, when they gave him that message. So it's possible that one of those races might visit the Earth soon.
Great
question. One of the things that brings a lot of credibility to Billy Meyer's case is that he has something like 1,000 crystal clear daylight photographs of these UFOs from a race of individuals he calls the Pajarans. I wondered if you had seen any pictures of Elohim's craft.
No. No. All they gave Rael was the message. And the one in 73 and the one in 75, and they contact him once a year telepathically with a few updates here and there.
Mark, that's a really good question, because I can tell you that the Billy Meyer story has had less success
selling their idea of the Plajarans, even with the crystal clear photographs, than the Raelian movement has had with only Rael telling the story.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Sometimes I think the UFO subculture kind of enjoys the mystery or something. They almost enjoy.
I would agree with you. Yeah, sometimes the ufologists even shoot themselves in the foot in that way. Yeah,
I agree totally. That's a strange phenomenon. I would think there'd be a lot more interest in the Billy Meyer case than there is. I've studied it a lot, and I find it very fascinating. I don't want to take up too much time. I had a few more quick questions, and then I'll get off.
Oh, go ahead, Mark. We have probably 8 minutes left in this hour.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. You had stated that Rael actually went to the Elohim planet and saw
yes.
Buddha and Jesus?
Yes, in 1975.
Now, did the Elohim play a role in the resurrection of Christ? Or
absolutely.
I was just wondering... Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely. Christ was killed. It was... His mission was to spread the Old Testament more than it had been, which is the testimony to the creation of life on Earth. They cloned him. It was that word gets a bad rap, just thanks to all the bad sci-fi movies, but they recreated him. They resurrected him. All those words mean the same thing, basically, contextually. So, yes, they, for sure, they brought him back to life. And he's alive and well today.
That's quite interesting. Now, what are the steps that you must go through to join the Raelian movement? Is there anything specific you have to do?
Oh, no. Read the book.
Okay.
If you find you're in harmony with it, you can be a sympathizer. You can decide to officially recognize the Elohim if you like. That's what I did back in 92. There's no mysticism to it. It's so simple. There's people are involved in whatever capacity they want to be involved. This movement is based on total freedom. And if you want to be a passive member, fantastic. If you want to be a very active member like myself, that's fantastic. And anything in between is perfect because it's you.
Do you guys have like regular meetings? At certain places and times and things like that?
Sure, yeah, locally, across the country, across the world, in every country we have meetings, usually at least one a month. And where there are several more Raelians living in the same city, you know, we like to get together and parties and, you know, events and things like this. We are about celebrating life. We were engineered. We were created for pleasure, and pleasure is what motivates every being on Earth. We do everything for pleasure or the avoidance of displeasure. So we love being together. We love, and I say this, I'm an artist. I'm like a fiercely independent artist. So I don't necessarily like to be around a lot of people very often, and that's fine because that's me. That's my genetic code. That's what I choose. But we do have meetings, we do have parties, we do have events regularly, depending on if there are other members in a certain locality.
Do you or any of the other Raelians have any kind of telepathic contact with the Elohim, or does that only come through Rael?
I'm always careful in the way I answer this question. That mostly comes through Rael. We have attempted telepathic contact, but regularly, like following a meditation, where we attempt to contact them. I know that brings to mind people sitting around with little antennas on their heads. Sometimes the way the public and the media like to make fun of telepathy, but in a meditative state. The telepathic organ in the brain works much better. And there's been once or twice where I thought I felt a lot of love coming back, but I can't put my finger on it and document it, so I'm really reluctant to say that I've ever truly
felt
anything.
Let me expand on Mark's question just a little bit, because, you know, I'm definitely open-minded to the idea that mental pictures or messages are broadcast across space and time almost instantaneously, if not instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But it might not be channel specific, because what I see, for instance, in the scientific world is a lot of simultaneous development of very, very complicated concepts. And these individuals are not communicating with each other, but they are creating different aspects of the message.
Yes.
Mathematicians and biologists and engineers.
It even happened with the radio.
Yeah, they react differently. So I would think that the message is not channel specific, but more interactive, more intertwined with all humanity, just because
maybe
of
that's
you're listening or not.
I would definitely think that that's highly possible, and maybe that's why some people read the book and are instantly in harmony with it, and some, you know, maybe they have a higher telepathic ability. I don't know. I'm just speculating here. But it's possible, because I agree with what you're saying.
Thanks for answering my questions. I really appreciate it, and it's a very interesting show this evening, and I will listen off the air and talk to you guys later.
All right,
nice
thanks,
to meet
Mark.
You tomorrow. Good night.
Good night. Now, before we end this hour, we have about, I'm going to extend it a little bit, go about 7 minutes, because we got a late start because of technical difficulties. That's why you can't hear me very loudly. Normally, we do this all voice over IP, but tonight we're having to use regular phone lines, which is a little like two cans and a string for this industry. So I'll try to, you know, speak as clearly as I can and make sure that it's loud enough for everyone. But, you know, I talked about different open minds who reach out into, shall I call it, the maelstrom of creativity, and they pull in portions that resonate with them. But there is something sociological here, because in every society, 98% of the people will obey the laws of that society without being compelled to do so. They drive the speed limit, they refrain from larceny and violence, but 2% or so of the society will not obey any laws, and in fact they get great satisfaction in taking from others that which does not belong to them, as if they are owed a living from that society. How does the Elohim counsel us to move the race forward in this way if aggressive criminals are the ones who rise to powerful positions, either in the public eye or even more especially behind the scenes where we can't see them?
It's a really good question, and it's several levels deep. Basically, what the Elohim give us, they could have come back here and given us a lot of technology and really impressed us, and we'd have a lot more technology. We've got more technology than we can handle right now. So what they give us is a philosophy in which everybody, if they wish to apply it, will be happier. And if we are happier as individuals, we will be happier as a society. And if we're happier as a society, all things will improve. Scientific development, sociological, sexuality, spirituality, education, politics, everything will improve if we are happier. This is what's missing on the planet, is happiness. We're taught by monotheistic religions that you're here basically to suffer and you'll be happier after you're dead. There's only one way of living is right. And to be intolerant of other people's views, and certainly intolerant of their religious beliefs, that only one way can be right. This creates a huge amount of stress on the planet, and fear, and war, and violence, and even within a country, which may be culturally the same religion, people tend to find the things that separate them and divide them instead of the things that connect them and bring them together. So the shortest answer to your question is, you know, to live a philosophy which makes us happier. Because when we're happier, all of those things will improve. There'll be fewer and fewer criminals if people are just happy, because children will be raised by balanced, happy people, so that they'll grow up to be balanced, happy people, and instead of being raised by people who were raised in, you know, an unhappy home or an unhappy society. We are just a continuation of what our ancestors gave our parents, and each of us try, if we were free thinkers anyway, to try to stop that book and to break that chain and to start to think for ourselves and to be more accepting, not even more accepting, but actually promote people being different than we are, because it's in that way that we discover the real beauty of humanity and its differences.
That's really an excellent answer. Let's go ahead and take, I'm just going to take a little musical interlude here for about 5 minutes and just give our listeners a break, and it's a good place for us to stop recording for a second and reboot everything. So let's just take a break right now, and we will come back after this musical interlude with more of Ricky and the Raelian movement. That's important stuff we're going through here. And don't forget who you are, and this is important stuff we're talking about. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in about 5 minutes with more X Squared Radio.
spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from the frozen wastelands of western Idaho. Our guest tonight is Ricky Rohr. He's a spokesman for the Raelian Movement. And we're having a very interesting discussion tonight, hour two of X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us tonight. Ricky, I got a question. Is the earth upon which we live, is it a living thing?
That's another good question. What the Elohim explain by living, do you mean conscious?
Well, I mean, it's an intertwined bit of matter and energy that for which we're responsible, right? Our behavior upon it and how we treat it, is it reacting to it?
All the planets are a part of something that is alive. Just as the planets are alive, but if you mean if the Earth conscious, my understanding is no. But it is a part of something larger, which is indeed conscious. For example, one cell of our body may not be conscious that it exists, or that its neighbors exist, but together, our brain, a certain area of our brain, is conscious that all of these cells exist, and through meditation, through feeling those cells of the body, all those cells feel connected. So similarly, it's like that in the infinite and large. And a very important concept that they would explain that there is the infinitely large and the infinitely small. All the planets, all the stars, all the galaxies, billions of galaxies, are but a tiny particle of something larger. And that larger thing is even a tiny piece of something else larger, and it goes on infinitely. And it's the same with the infinitely small. No matter how small the particle we can imagine, the atom, the quark, no matter how small the space we can conceive of, that space can be divided into half or 10 pieces or a billion pieces, and each of those spaces can be divided into, you know, tiny pieces, particles also. So there is no such thing as a particle which would equal zero, otherwise nothing would exist, because a trillion trillion times zero is still zero. So what the Elohim explains is that there are different levels of life throughout levels of infinity. That all of the galaxies, our entire universe, infinite as it is a tiny piece of something larger. And they have proven that that something larger is alive. They don't know if we're a particle in the finger of a larger being, or a worm, or a dog, or infinite number of other forms of life, just forms that we're familiar with, you know, this conversation. You know, they've only proven that something is alive, but they don't know why.
Well, I know when we dissolve subatomic particles like protons into their energy components, you know, we have only learned so far that there's a recipe or of sorts, anyway, making nothing but energy. That forms matter, eternal and incomprehensible to us. This energy can never be destroyed. So how does it organize into such a small number of atomic particles that seem to obey very predictable laws, at least as far as we can see in the universe?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I think even the most brilliant scientists are still endeavoring to find that out.
Well, we're getting close.
And what's interesting, I'm sorry to interrupt, is that we're all working together toward a bullseye. You have the scientists that are working in medicine, the scientists that are working in astronomy, you have the scientists that are working together in all these different fields, and they're all coming toward a bullseye together. And you know, we'll reach a point of singularity within 15, 20, 25 years maximum, but we understand the basic workings of everything, literally everything. And I'm personally very, very, very excited about that. And what an age, what a privilege we have to live in this age. You know, we had so many billions of ancestors who would die by the age of 20, you know, just if they got a small ear infection or something. We're living in an age where we can just see this stuff exponentially speed up and happen right before our eyes, and it's a real privilege to be around right now.
I guess so my question is that there is intelligence in the formation of these rudimentary particles. I mean, is there a voice of some guidance that brings energy together to become a proton, like a graviton, for instance? Is this the level that the Elohim work on, or are they working on a level, say, post-atomic, just in arranging molecules in certain patterns instead of creating matter out of energy?
I'm not sure, but I think both. They can displace entire planets and solar systems. They can, you know, dabble with the infinitely large, and that they can, you know, move solar systems. And they can, just remember that 22,000 years ago, they were putting together atoms, molecules to form life. So imagine how far they could have come in 22,000 years. Look at how far we've come in the past 50 years. It's exponential. You know, in the last 50 years, we've learned so much more, you know, many more times than we've learned in all of humanity's history. And if, you know, can we imagine, you know, the Elohim who are 250 centuries ahead of us? You know, how far advanced are they? We can't imagine. We're still primitive people.
What do they want to see us accomplish? I mean, yes, we've come a long way in 6,000 years, but literally in the last, 100 years, we climbed down off the horse and put ourselves in spaceships.
Yes. They want us to seek, to continue to seek to understand matter, to understand the universe around us, to understand the infinitely small, which helps to compose everything. They want us to understand. They don't want us to believe anymore. For so many thousands of years, the prophets that they were in contact with who taught humanity had to believe because we couldn't understand. But we're reaching a level now, and that's exactly why they send this type of message now, as opposed to another prophet who says, believe, believe, believe. So what they want us to do is to understand. And again, they treat us as individuals. They don't treat us as children. But they knew, like any good parents, that we would have to grow and evolve on our own and learn our own lessons as a society. So we've made it to this age. We're on the verge of the golden age right now. It's like a baby that's ready to be born, a humanity that's ready to be born into a larger galactic brotherhood, if you will. We're right on the edge, and all we need is a bit more love and a bit more understanding. You know, they created us with plenty of intelligence. You know, we're very clever, we're very intelligent, but if we don't master our aggression, if we don't seek to understand more and believe less, then we could destroy ourselves.
Well, as we move away from faith and more toward knowledge and stand upon that knowledge, is there a growth to the human soul, or do we just ignite, burn, and then extinguish like an ember never to exist again as our own intelligence?
Again, they said that they didn't create us with a soul. However, everyone has access to eternal life. And it's like a scientific reincarnation, if you will. It's an advanced cloning. The genetic code contains all the information that one needs to recreate the being. The only step missing is to be able to download the memory into some sort of hard drive or soft drive or whatever technology allows, and to recreate that being through its genetic code, and then to upload the memory back into the being.
Well, let me ask you a question relative to that, because, you know, it's clear to me that although the Elohim may have been involved in the creation of life here, life goes on by itself. We propagate on our own. Husbands and wives come together and have children, and thus their genetics are passed on to their children. Does the memory of ancestry pass forward into the children?
The Elohim didn't comment on that specifically, but I read some articles on that that give evidence of that. And matter of fact, I read one this week. We even have a new subscription, a free new subscription. It's called Rael Science. You can subscribe online, and those types of articles are always hunted down and sent to all subscribers. The Elohim didn't comment on that specifically, but there is growing evidence for that. Again, Moran would be a better one to ask for that.
Right, right. So, well, just so that the listeners that have tuned in now in the second hour of our three-hour program know where to go to get the e-book and where to go to get this information, what is the website address?
www.rael.org. rael.org.
Very simple. We can keep up with that for sure. We'll make several announcements on that. By the way, if you miss any portion of the live broadcast tonight, you can access it by becoming a member of the archives at xsquaredradio.com for less than the price of a cup of coffee per month. You can have unlimited listening. So we want to encourage you to do that.
I read that on your site.
And the link to rael.org and a brief synopsis of what we're talking about tonight will be in the archives, as well as the access to each one of the hours in stereo, so you can access that tonight. And yes, you get to listen to all the same technical difficulties that everyone else did. That's part of the charm of the program. It's not so canned and perfect as some of the larger radio programs. We are human here. Well, okay, we're transgressing a little bit here, but we're talking about a pretty deep subject here, and it involves not just you as individuals, but you as a race and the survival of you in the universe and in conjunction with this planet. Do the Elohim search for the perfect world that's already in the right orbit, that has the right chemicals, has water and everything on it, or do they do any kind of terraforming to sort of get a world ready for life?
Both. When they discovered the Earth, they discovered that it had all the necessary components. The sun, the star was, you know, putting the right amount of light. Of course, they would create the life on the Earth, you know, according to the yearly cycle of the planet. So they find, you know, the closest they can, you know, the planet that they can with all the necessary ingredients, and then they terraform it and manipulate it from there.
Well, that's cool. In the book, they talk about the use, or at least the function of mediums on our planet, people that have a peculiar heightened propensity for being able to receive information from other beings who have either recently departed our planet or who are at least living in another state of consciousness. Do the Elohim use mediums for getting their messages to various areas of the planet that, say, Rael can't get to?
To my understanding, no. But again, there's things that, you know, the Elohim told us the most important things that would help just to have a better philosophy for the planet. They didn't really say specifically that they would contact other mediums, but they did say that they only contact one prophet at a time. They're only one messenger at a time, otherwise the message would become confused.
Well, that makes complete sense. I mean, you can't have two prophets out there competing for the same pulpit. That just doesn't work. There is mention in the message from the designers. That's the e-book that's online, and you could download it for free at ryle.org if you haven't read it. It's a great read, a little over 400 pages, and it doesn't take long to go through. And by the way, it is a PDF, and if you're using Adobe Acrobat, you can turn on an audio reader. So we'll actually read the book to you while you're working on your favorite stuff.
Get out. They do that now?
Oh, yeah. You just go under View in the Adobe Acrobat Reader, go down to the bottom, and turn the Read Out Loud function on, and it will read the entire book to you.
I didn't know.
Yeah, great technology out there. So you can be listening to an e-book while you're working on those spreadsheets there at your favorite workstation. Anyway, there's mention in the book, Message from the Designers, that there is an ability that the Elohim have to create robots or beings like us. How does that work?
Yes. They are human beings like us without the consciousness. They are programmed for only specific functions, just like we would program a washing machine or a dryer or a dishwasher. They just happen to be biological robots. And we have mechanical robots, you know, all of our gadgets and appliances. Those are programmed to do one thing. On the Elohim's planet, thanks to their great advance in technology, they create biological robots that are programmed to do specific things. They don't have consciousness. They, in other words, they wouldn't feel like they're slaves or anything like that. Just like our washing machine doesn't feel like it's a slave. Although when I was a kid, I felt sorry for all of our appliances because I didn't want them. I felt sorry because they had to do all the work.
Well, I hope they come with the clock already set. I still can't figure out how to set that on my VCR. So are there beings like this on the Earth right now?
No. Are there unconscious people? Yeah. But
are there creations
not the biological robots, no.
Are there creations of the Elohim on this planet right now, or are only the beings that are actually born through the natural propagation process through copulation on this planet that are here right now?
Only the latter.
I guess the reason I ask is there are some who claim that there is at least an active hybrid program going on right now between Earth humans and aliens, and probably at the very extent of that, maybe humans that are actually born and raised up to adult status on other worlds and then brought here and placed into our society. There's none of those shenanigans going on right now?
Not according to the Elohim. And there's certainly nothing like that in the book, and Ryle has never made reference to anything like that, even close.
Okay, that's cool. So everybody that's here is homegrown. That's what I kind of...
Yeah, well put, yes.
And I guess the question Mark brought up the last hour, we'll just address it briefly in this hour. Are there beings from our world who are living with them on their ship right now or on their planet right now?
It's a good question, and yes, there are. As I made reference to earlier, Ryle actually met Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad face-to-face. And at that time, when he was there in 1975, the Elohim told him that there were 8,400 Earth people who had lived on Earth and had died and were recreated and living alive and well on that planet. When they first recreated the prophets like Jesus, you know, as we talked about, they brought him back to life. All these people who really served humanity, they have eternal life. The eternal life that, you know, primitive men were told everyone has access to. And when they first recreated those prophets, the prophets felt a little lonely because they didn't have any of the people around them that they, you know, any earth people. So the Elohim had granted permission that a certain amount of deserving earth people would be recreated for now instead of waiting until the last proverbial judgment day. And I just said proverbial.
I could see where 8,400 could become a little boring, too. Are there any plans to expand that population of eternal life beings?
I guess it really depends on how many deserving earthlings there are.
Are there any of the 8,400 that will be returning to Earth in their resurrected
yes.
state?
Yes, absolutely. Certainly the great prophets, you know, the 40 or so great prophets, from Jesus to, you know, Joseph Smith, Ezekiel, all the great prophets. And, you know, they promised they would return one day, and indeed they will.
Well, that's what I kind of wanted to know, because, you know, there are certain individuals, either through their intelligence or through their resonation with the message of, shall we call it, divinity, who rise to immense capabilities in a single lifetime, where the average person, say a follower of a prophet, would struggle with one or two aspects their entire life, like something like tithing or something like chastity. They'll struggle their entire life with it, whereas, you know, beings like you mentioned, Joseph Smith or Muhammad or Ezekiel or Isaiah would have no temptation whatsoever with any of those, and would have an instant resonation with the deeper concepts and be able to propagate those to their followers. It would be great that those minds, those very rare personalities would be preserved and then brought back to fulfill their mission.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thought. A little clarification from the Raelian point of view. The reference to chastity belts and things like this, you know, there's been a stigma, a negative connotation which goes along with sex, thanks to how Christianity has evolved and how monotheism has evolved. But originally, you know, we were created for pleasure. You know, sexual pleasure, pleasure of food, pleasure in feeling the sun on our face, pleasure in you know, holding a kitten, whatever pleasure. And this includes sexual pleasure. And yes, it's good to have everything in balance, because we shouldn't be concerned only with sex in our life, but there's a certain negativity and a taboo that's come along with monotheism when we speak about sexuality, and you know, the proverbial monk who can go without, you know, for a long time. It's interesting to be able to train the mind to dominate the mind and the body. That's important. But only for a certain time. You know, the Elohim want us to live a life of pleasure. That's why they created it. That's why they made it so pleasurable to have sex. That's why they made it so pleasurable to feel the caress of a mother or a child or, you know, or a friend. You know, we're programmed for pleasure. And it's a big part of the Raelian philosophy to embrace that pleasure and to live it openly and to spread it.
Do the Elohim communicate telepathically with more than one being here on Earth? In other words, do they send out a sort of a global message that people who resonate with that or who are meditating on that particular subject pick up on that message so that they can help humanity evolve globally?
That's another really good question. Ryle said that they will occasionally help some people telepathically. Let's say a scientist is really close to figuring something out and just can't quite make it around that last turn. Sometimes, occasionally, they will give him or her a little nudge telepathically. Or maybe the same for an artist or whatever. Sometimes, yes, they will help some people.
I know in doing some of my research for my own publication, I noticed that even mathematicians, historically, for instance, Chandrasekhar, he claims that in dreams or in visions, he was handed complete formulas, not derivations, but complete formulas. And it really took the mathematical community several years to catch up to his whole formulas that he introduced to the world.
Interesting.
He claims that he got these through dreams, and of course, he, much better than me, would, you know, receive these formulas telepathically and understood how to write them down and the symbolisms and their relationships mathematically. I guess that's the reason I asked the question, because...
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. As an artist, I've had two dreams where I was playing my instrument and I woke up knowing how to play something that I was having difficulty with. Now, that could be explained other ways also, though. We know that the brain works while we sleep and processes information and does like a defrag for the day and stuff like that. But I've had similar dreams. Were the Elohim speaking to me? I doubt it. I think they had better things to do than to teach me how to play a song on my instrument. But it is interesting. Maybe the brain accesses certain parts that would be blocked during the day while we're awake. I don't know.
Well, what if prayers? We are, at least in our scriptures and our prophets, we are commanded to pray. What does that mean, and what does it gain the Raelian?
It's another good question. Prayer, as the Elohim explained, the origin of prayer was telepathic communication. Just one or two-way communication. I pray regularly. I used to pray very fervently to a god. Then I started understanding who my creators were. Now I pray to the Elohim. If my prayers are just to thank, to feel a huge amount of gratitude, to feel connected with them, to let them know that I am here. If you need me, if you want me, I am here. I understand what Ryle has, the message that Ryle has brought, and I hope that I can do more to help this humanity. Things of this nature. It's really up to each person to decide what, that's a profoundly personal thing for each person to pray, to say the prayers the way they want. But the origin of prayer was telepathic contact, similar to the story of Samson in the Bible.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, and not encouraging anyone to stop praying in any way. One last question for you, Ricky, before we go on to Dr. Sam. This is a little different format than we normally have on X Squared Radio because we have two guests and we wanted to give each one of them about an hour and a half. Are there plans to build a Elohim base on the Earth?
Yes, that's the embassy that they requested. There are a few countries have been approached with this already. A couple of them are interested. Originally, the Elohim asked that the embassy be built in Israel because this is the hub of the three of the largest religions on Earth, Jerusalem, and thus all the hot spot over there. We have asked Israel several times. They haven't said no, but they haven't said yes. And about 10 years ago, the Elohim told Ryle, okay, Israel is being a little stiff-necked about this, so it's okay to ask other countries now. And if Israel does not accept, they will lose the protection that they have been supplied for these past decades. So yes, there are plans to build the embassy. The Elohim will just like any embassy on the earth. Japan has an embassy in the United States. The United States has an embassy in the Congo. You know, just like any embassy, it would be diplomatically immune territory. There would be a no-fly zone above the embassy. And we could build the building really quickly. But the important thing is that it has an extraterritorial status. In other words, diplomatically immune territory. So the political ramifications are, those are the devils in the details there.
Well, that being said, I think it's a great idea to have the gods among us once again. We think we are so
we
smart.
We all dreamed of it. So many of us, you know, when we were kids, we would say, you know, if I was alive when Jesus was around, I would have recognized him and followed him. Or if I was, you know, if I would have known Moses, I would have followed him. I'm sure I would have. But there's a little bit of a trap there that it's very easy to follow a dead prophet. It's much more tricky to follow the one who's alive, because the dead prophet can never correct you or tell you that you're doing something wrong, you know. It will never make you feel uncomfortable. That prophet will never go against your education or your worldview. But the one who's alive will do that very often.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they'll respond to the political pressures of the day. And almost, like most political leaders or religious leaders, they'll spend most of their time putting out fires. Ricky, it's been an awesome pleasure to have you on the program. It's been about 90 minutes since we started, and we're going to try and see if we can get Dr. Sam on here. Is there anything that you'd like to leave our guests with that we haven't covered so far from your point of view?
We covered a lot. Be happy. Be happy. Happiness is contagious, just like fear and hate is contagious. Fear and love cannot occupy the same brain at the same time. So choose love, choose happiness. And should you be curious, go download the book and read it and enjoy it.
Well said. I appreciate you coming on the program. And we'll talk at you later. And
okay.
Send emails back and forth so we can get a little bit more information. But I appreciate you very much. We'll take about a 3-minute musical interlude here, and then we'll have Dr. Sam on with X Squared Radio. Don't go away.
Make me a witness. Yeah.
No worries.
No worries. We'll carry on. Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're about an hour and a half into our program. We're trying to raise our guest, Dr. Sam, with the Raelian Movement. We appreciate you being here with us tonight. We're coming to you live from western Idaho. A little bit cold out tonight. Our AccuWindow forecast says no rain, though. It's going to be nice weather the rest of the week up here. The east has gotten hit with some surprising weather, though. 14 inches of snow in New York, a little bit of a surprise to everyone. And also, a newly discovered asteroid, 2009 DD45, is about to fly past Earth, only 73,000 kilometers away. The space rock is about 35 meters in diameter, similar in size to the Tunguska impactor of 1908. At the closest approach on March 2nd, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that's 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 2009 DD45 will speed through the constellation Virgo, shining as brightly as an 11th magnitude star. I guess my question is, who has our back up there? This rock is a little too close for comfort. A little bit larger than a city bus. Could make quite an impact if it were to veer too close. 73,000 kilometers is not very far. Also, satellite Cosmos has left a trail of space debris after its collision with the Iridium satellite last week. NASA is evaluating the risk to the upcoming Space Shuttle Atlantis mission. We'll keep you posted. If you have given any thought at all about starting your own business, if it's out of your basement or your attic or the trunk of your car, you're going to need a business card. What we want you to do is go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the Vista Prints banner, because not only will you get excellent business cards, excellent quality, you're going to get it free. Yeah, I said free. There are over 147 free designs that you can pick up at Vista Prints. If you ever wanted to see your name in print, what you do, how you do it, your phone number, email address, text address, Skype address, you name it, click on the Vista Prints banner at X Squared Radio and get started. Make your mark. Also, one of the newer affiliates with X Squared Radio is Campus Book Rentals. Those of you that are college students, or even better, if you're the parent of a college student and you're bearing the cost of buying those textbooks, why spend $500 to $800 per semester for textbooks? Click on the Campus Book Rentals banner at xsquaredradio.com and you can rent your textbooks. Could save you
thousands of dollars off of your average degree, and grad students can save probably even more than that. So as we continue to try to raise Dr. Sam, who is our scheduled guest for the Raelian movement, he is a molecular biologist, and he's going to bring, or at least try to satiate your thirst, your hunger, for the more scientific end of what we normally go through here at X Squared Radio. We know how you seek after the deeper sciences, and we try to bring that to you as much as we can. We really, really appreciate Ricky Rohr, who was on the first hour and a half tonight, because we got to understand the Raelian movement from a very talented and dedicated artist. And those of you that want the more esoteric side of the Raelian movement, you got it the first hour and a half of the program tonight. Once we raise Dr. Sam, we will try to bring you the more scientific end of the Raelian movement so that you can understand how this makes sense, how it all comes together, how it it actually is feasible that there is a superior race out there that was not only involved in the formation of human life on this planet, but maybe a lot more involved than you think. And the important part is that we don't lose sight of who we are and what kind of capabilities that we have. The intelligence that we are born with certainly gives us some advantage, but I can tell you that has very little to do with genetics. It doesn't matter what your parents had a history of doing. You are given a fresh start when you get here. And the idea is not to go through life paycheck to paycheck, not family vacation to family vacation, or even worse, don't live at all until some fabled future retirement date. I will enjoy life once I retire from General Motors. By the way, that might come way sooner than you think if you look at the news. We need you to think about the now. We need you to think about this exact moment. In fact, moments can't really be quantified. There's no conversion factor for moments. However, be that as it may, some are very short and brief and fleeting, and some can be savored like a piece of 80% dark chocolate. You just don't wolf the thing down. You move it around the gums and savor it over all of the taste buds so that you can really relish the flavor of it. Not that there are many calories, or not that you're conscious of the antioxidant benefits of high concentrated chocolate, but there are other benefits which are savored in a moment. And if you just treat your life as though it's just moments, one after the other, they're pretty easy to manage. You don't have to look at a clock. You don't have to worry about when you're going to punch out or punch in, or how long your lunch break is, or how long you've been married to one another. No, you can take control of your own creation, as it were. And as my friend Jay-Z Knight and her advisor, Ramtha, would say, you create a new neighborhood. You focus on those things that are the goals in your life. And believe it or not, just the focus on that, just the resonation of that alone, and movement on your part, and listening on your part, will have amazing results in your life. And it really doesn't matter what you focus on or who you focus on. It can be done, and it does have its effect. And you are involved in the creation of your own life and your own life conditions. One of the things that I found interesting about reading the book Message from the Designers, which you can pick up for yourself by going to rael.org, R-A-E-L, rael.org. The book is free. You can download it yourself, read it at your leisure, or if you're particularly computer adept and you're using Adobe Acrobat Reader, even if it's the free one, you can go to the toolbar at the top under View and go down to the bottom and activate the reader, and you can actually have Adobe in a computer voice read you the entire book. And, of course, if you have the better versions, the not free version, but the actual paid-for version of Adobe, you can even speed up that reading rate, and you can even change the voice from male to female or back and forth. Just some pointers, just some things out there to help you enjoy your reading experience. Here at X Squared Radio, I did want to try to give you, as we're still trying to reach our guest, Dr. Sam, an update on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Last week, the board met, and we decided to expand the passenger list. I know for the last 2 years we've been working on this. We were concentrating on a 100-person nuclear-powered icebreaker. As it turns out, there are so many applicants for this trip. Unbelievable, the response. Well over 2,000. We've decided to expand the passenger list to 500. Yes, that means that we are in the process of working through a broker to change ships where we can now accommodate 500 passengers. Now, this changes the dynamics a little bit, and I want you to pay close attention here because it brings into reality the possibility of you going on the voyage. When we were working with 100 people, the cost was the same. That is to say, it's about $2 million to put together a charter and launch the ship and take off to the predetermined location above the 85th parallel. And that required the use at the time of a nuclear-powered icebreaker because of the length of time we were going to spend on site and the fact that at that time there were about 4 meters of ice that we had to crunch through. No longer the case. The Arctic ice has receded to a point where we can reach our destination with only a little bridge being opened by an icebreaker, the rest of the distance in open ocean. We can actually use an ice-rated hull. Now, that changes the dynamics a lot in the sense that now we can take a luxury liner capable of sleeping 500 people on it, and it changes the price. Now, instead of $20,000 for each and every bed on that ship, it now comes down to about $3,900. Now, that is well within the pocketbook of most people. You might think that you have 6 months to raise $3,900 to buy your ticket to get on this voyage. You do not. You have 90 days. The money that we have to put forward to charter the ship has to be put out in less than 90 days. So that means if you want to be part of the voyage and you are already in the database, you are going to receive an email this week inviting you to board a Norwegian ship. And now it gets a lot simpler because you don't have to have a visa. You only have to have a passport. So it's a lot easier than flying to Moscow, than taking a train north and taking a bus east and all of that problem with getting into and out of Russia. We're now going to a country that's much more open and friendly and easy to get into and out of, and that's Norway. So if you want to be part of that, you need to get a hold of us. If you're not in the database, if you have not gone to phoenixsciencefoundation.org, and clicked on the APEX link, that's Advanced Planetary Explorations, at the top, and gone down and filled out the application, you need to do so. You have a chance to do it. See yourself there, no obstacles, be a part of the greatest expedition in the history of the world. It is now within economic range of doing so. Not hard to do at all. It's certainly not as much as a new car. It's much more manageable now. Barely the price of an average 15-day conference that you might go to. Only this one, you're going to be part of 23 different documentary series segments that will be shot. Over 3,000 hours of film, more than 20,000 stills, and you'll be involved in the experiments and you'll be involved in the experience. So if you want to be part of that, get to phoenixsciencefoundation.org, click on the Apex link and go down to the Apply link and fill it out, because we want to have you there. And to tell you the truth, it makes a big difference to have 500 conscious beings focused on one thing than it does 100. It might be this was what was supposed to happen all along. So it is now a straight up 8 o'clock. We'll be on the air for one more hour. We will make an attempt during the break to get a hold of Dr. Sam. If not, we will continue 1 hour with open phones and your calls. We're going to take a short break just after this. And we'll talk to you after this with more X Squared Radio.
Something told me to run, and honey, you know me, so there are sounds in my head, a little more to whisper, that I should go and this should end. I found myself with someone. 'Cause I don't know who I am, who I am without you. All I know is that I'm sure. And I don't know if I can stand another hand upon me. I'm not sure.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
And we'll get back to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're here with us tonight because we're talking about the Raelian movement. We had Ricky Rohr on for an hour and a half. And right now we're trying to reach Dr. Sam, who is a molecular biologist. We'll try to give us the scientific end of the Raelian movement. Our AccuWindow forecast tonight says clear and cold. By the way, if you got out last night and looked at the Moon and Venus having a convergence, wow, really spectacular. You might still be able to see them get pretty close to one another, but a fingernail moon next to the bright glory of Venus last night was really something, really something. And we'll try to keep you posted on all really neat convergences like that as we progress with our program throughout the year. By the way, this is our fourth year with BBS Radio. BBS Radio is for all intents and purposes, and you can check it out yourself, the number one internet talk radio network on the planet. And I mean all the internet talk radio programs out there. BBS Radio is the number one network. And so far, still this year, X Squared Radio is the number one referral program on the network. And we greatly appreciate BBS Radio and our producer, Don Newsom, and all the many millions of listeners that cruise through this network each week. We're also coming to you live as a simulcast through the Steeleye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. Get a chance to check out his program as well. As you know, we covered a lot of information in the first hour and a half. If you missed that, this is a three-hour program. You can always sign up to the archives at xsquaredradio.com. Click on the subscribe link. They're right there in the middle of the page. And for less than the cost of a cup of coffee, you have free access to hundreds and hundreds of hours of interviews with some of the brightest and best minds in the world, and we're going to continue to bring quality like that to you in 2009. This has started out as a hobby about 4 years ago in 2005, X Squared Radio. We coined the name because we wanted everything to be positive, and as you know, any number put into X Squared as a function comes out positive. Except one, and that one is an imaginary number called I, which is the square root of negative one. So I try to stay out of the way of the program and just ask the questions, do the reading and ask the questions that you would ask, and provide you free and unfettered access through multiple phone lines, which you can reach us anywhere on planet or off planet at 776-530-5154, or you can reach us most nights through Skype. Tonight it's being a little unreliable, so we suggest you use your free nights and weekends. Try to access a cell phone tower from somewhere within the planet or from the highest mountain or from high above the atmosphere is even better. Reach that cell phone tower and call in tonight and ask us anything, anything at all. We'll try to accommodate. If we don't have the answer, we'll try to find someone who does. The Raelian movement is an interesting movement. It has been around since the early 70s. 1975 was when the first publication came out. And I have to say that reading the book, Message from the Designers, has been an eye-opener for me. I've not thought about extraterrestrial creators in this way. If you're interested in the subject, and don't be afraid, no fear in this knowledge, pick up the book. It's free, free, by going to ryle.org, and read it for yourself, and pick up what pieces resonate with you. If they don't, that's fine, too. In fact, all of that is fine with the Raelians. I don't sense a
resentful bone in the organization. So if you're into new knowledge and new frontiers, as it were, for the human race, this might be a good one for you to research. If not, we have about 55 minutes left in the program, and I will attempt to fill in as we try to get a hold of our guest, Dr. Sam. This arrangement was made with a great organizer and event planner for the Raelian movement, who has been communicating with me for the last couple of weeks, and we'll try to keep it straight tonight. And if we miss anything, you know, we'll bring a little bit more to you in another program at another time. Coming up next week, we have a fill-in, not a fill-in, but a reschedule. We had Michael Crittenden, or Walter Crittenden, who was scheduled last month. One of those things that happens, just a comedy of events that occur that just prevent you from showing up on time, and we totally understand that. No problem rearranging that at all. He's coming on next week to fill that in on the 8th, if I have my dates correct. If not, it'll be the 15th. Anyway, you can go to X Squared Radio, check out the schedule. We have all the past guests, all the future guests, and we try not to book them out too far because we want to stay current. You know, some of these programs book out 6-8 months in advance, and you know what? It's just not current. We need to stay with our finger on the pulse of humanity, everything that's going on current. So you're probably never going to see us book out more than 6 weeks. We try not to. We're only on once a week. We read 50 to 60 books a year to try to get you the best information that we can. And, of course, we love interacting with you, the caller. So if you get a chance, pick up the phone. If you have never called in before, it's no problem. No problem at all. I'm sitting in here in my office in western Idaho in jeans and a T-shirt. And you can call in, and we'll talk about anything. The number is 776-530-5154. The numbers are posted at xsquaredradio.com. And make it a bookmark. You can come back and call us anytime. If you're sitting there working on your favorite quilt, or your model airplane, or composing music, listening live, driving down the highway, makes no difference to me. Call in and we'll talk. One of the things that I found interesting about the Raelian movement is the fact that their concept of eternal life is that instead of the human spirit continuing on in the traditional manner that we've been taught by our religious leaders, the consciousness lives on in the cells of the body, particularly in the frontal lobe right behind the forehead. And so preserving this biological bit of material, even one cell of it, and getting it to the Raelians, they are able to literally resurrect you. Every hair, every bone, every cell, every eyelash back in place, along with all of your memories and your consciousness from your life here on this planet. And I find that fascinating. And the fact that there were 40 prophets as well as Jesus Christ on their ship or on their planet, preserved and in waiting, ready to come back and make their return appearance on this planet, can make sense to me. And hopefully it'll make sense to you as well. You also notice on this program, we don't attack our guests. I rarely disagree with a guest unless it calls for it. We want the guests to tell their whole story to you so you can make your mind up. We don't redact anything, not even the technical problems. We leave it all in there so that you can see that we're human. I am told that our guest is with us now. Dr. Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's no more my pleasure than it is yours, I can tell you. This is a fascinating subject. And I have to say, I got off a little bit too much into the scientific realm with Ricky. And we kind of rerouted a little bit. And I'm glad you're on the program. Dr. Sam is a molecular biologist, so we're probably going to have a little bit more scientific of a conversation now, so I hope you stick with us. You know, our best molecular biologists concur that DNA is an engineered molecule, and my experience has shown that you know, people lose their way when we try to think of human DNA as an original invention or something that happened by accident. Can you make an effective case for the evidence that shows that human DNA is a construct from, say, other DNAs around the universe?
You're absolutely right in terms of talking about the complexity of the DNA molecule. But let me say first that it's a little hard for me to hear you. If it would be possible to turn it off, that would be really great. Do you hear me okay?
All right, I'll try that. That's a little bit louder. It might be as loud as I can make it.
Okay, but do you hear me fine?
Oh, yes, I hear you perfectly.
Okay, excellent. Regarding the DNA molecule, you know, we are still at the first step of understanding how this amazing molecule works. It's like a language, exactly like a foreign language that we've never know about before. So when they discovered the DNA molecule, it was like just they found that it consists of four alphabet ATGT, like English alphabet has 26 letters. The DNA language at the time, they said it has only four letters, ATGT. But in fact, it seems, and then that four letters has written the whole language of who we are. It describes what a butterfly consists of, what a plant or tree is, and we as humans, our eyes, our ears, our hands, our brain, all that is encoded in the language of the DNA, in only those four letters. But in fact, as we understand the DNA molecule more, the more astonished the scientists become, because they find that their understanding is that right now there are at least three levels of language in this molecule. So first is the ACGT, but it's encoded for the RNA and then the protein that which does the function in the cell. But to translate that information in the language of the DNA to the protein, at least two levels of other super languages are written on top of the DNA, which depends on the molecule that write and read the language and how they transcribe it and translate it to the protein language. And the third language was just recently discovered, which is called the methylation of the DNA. So some of the nucleotide, ACGT language, these are called nucleotides of the DNA. Some of them are methylated. That is a methyl group, a CH3 group, for those of who are chemists understand that. The methyl group is added to this nucleotide, and that by itself is another language that needs to be read and transcribed, and then the cells replicate, it goes to the next generation of the cell, and in the sperm and the egg, it's translated in a different manner, and that's why the genetic inheritance of all the behaviors to inheritance goes from the parents to the children. So even though we've been working on it for 50 years now, we're still there are more astonishing things to come forward as they're discovering more levels of language on top of that. And in fact, it's so complex and sophisticated that it's just mind-boggling to try to think that it just happened by accident, as you were saying.
In a past career, I was a professional student. I never outgrew that. But there was a textbook that came out that was so good that it made the status of national bestseller. It was called Biochemical Predestination. It was written by Dean H. Kenyon, and he had a co-author. And I guess for more than a decade, he taught from this book until one day a grad student asked him a question. It really threw him. He said, you know, I mean, in his book, he eloquently explains the unfolding and replicating and refolding of proteins. In this mechanism, there are occasionally mistakes or alterations made to the new protein subject to environmental conditions and genetic choice, and he said that's where mutations come from. But one day, a student asked him a question. Where did the first protein come from? And after some reflection, you know, he decided that the first protein must have been engineered. DNA itself was an engineered molecule. So are the Elohim responsible for engineering the DNA molecule as we know it?
Well, in each generation of creation, when a humanity travels to another planet and creates life, there is always the opportunity to improve upon the language that is there already. So, of course, Elohim themselves have a genetic code that was created by their creators before them. So they knew about their own DNA, and they understood it. Their science progressed as our science is progressing right now. And then when they came to Earth to create life, they improved upon their own genetic code. So they did engineer our genetic code, because they added to it, they made it improved, and that's why they say that humanity on Earth is the future of civilizations in the galaxy. They were the past, we are the future. We are just like children, we're growing up to be mature and independent, and once we show the wisdom and the proper use of science and technology, then we deserve the inheritance of their science, and with all that we can move forward and go to the next stage of the golden civilization of humanity, and then we travel to other planets and create life even more advanced than our own, perhaps with people who may be even more intelligent than ourselves.
Do the Elohim live forever?
Only those who deserve it. Elohim have told us that they have two planets. One of their planets have 7 billion people, and they say that usually a planet of our size should have only 7 billion people, because otherwise there would be overpopulations and all the rest of the problem. But the second planet that they have is called the planet of the eternal. That's people who devote their life to progress, to humanity, to the advancement of science and art and creativity and beauty and love. Those people who show that dedication to serving humanity and doing extraordinary things, they deserve to live again. So they do live eternally. The people, the 7 billion, they live a normal life, but normal life for them is 1,200 years. So they live 1,200 years on their planet, and only those that during their lifetime show extraordinary talent or devotion, they will be recreated on the planet of the eternal. So, and they will be recreated. And they say the same thing for us. So among us, those who deserve to be recreated, like the prophet who made great progress in the human understanding of bringing love and brotherhood to the planet, they deserve to be recreated, and that's why they recreated the prophet and 8,400 other people. But it needs to be earned. Those who deserve it, they need to be created, and that's the scientific method that they will recreate those people.
Are the Elohim still evolving like us?
Absolutely. That's really, for me, that's the way I understand it. That's really the goal of life, to be always growing, to be always developing, to be always creating, to always discover new things, create new things using science and technology. There is no end to it. The universe is infinite. There's infinity of space. There's infinity of time. It's infinite when we go to the small matter, to subatomic particles, and when we go to the galaxies, that's also infinite, and there's no end to it. The same thing with the human understanding and human intelligence. There's no end to it, and the knowledge is also infinite. So forever we can be discovering new things and expanding our sphere of knowledge among the galaxies in the infinity large and infinity small. And in fact, they do tell us in the messages that they are still exploring the galaxies and the infinitely large, and trying to perhaps make contact with the infinitely large beings. Because it's really beyond comprehension, it's beyond description. Like, what is infinity? Can we even describe what infinity means? It would be a very hard time to describe or even understand it, but what they tell us is that we can connect with infinity, we can feel infinity. You see, there's always a difference between feeling and understanding. You can say what delicious meal that you eat, what it tastes like, you feel it. But if you want to describe it to somebody else, there's no way that they would feel the same thing that you felt. They have to taste the food themselves to feel the taste and the beauty. And it goes with anything. A beautiful music that you listen to, you feel it. but you cannot describe. And the same thing with infinity. We cannot describe it. We cannot understand it, but we can feel it. And that's why they taught Ra'el a meditation technique. We call it sensual meditation. And we do workshops on it at seminars. And the next one is coming up in April in Las Vegas. And all the information, of course, on our website. And in these workshops, they taught him this meditation technique exactly for that, for us to first connect with ourselves, to connect with our environment, to connect with the infinitely small and infinitely large that we are part of. And that's a wonderful feeling when we take a few deep breaths and we do the meditation and we feel connected first. We discover, it's almost like discovering yourself for the first time. Like, who am I really, existing on this beautiful planet with 7 billion people, and then as part of the solar system and as part of this galaxy and part of the infinite universe, all of that exists right now in this moment that I'm meditating, and you feel connected to that whole thing. And it's very hard to describe, but it's very easy to feel once you do the meditation.
Ricky, in our last hour, mentioned that the Elohim have 3 planets that they're working with right now that are either very close to our stage of development or very close to our genetic makeup, in the sense that they're humans like us, although maybe they don't all breathe oxygen. But is there a constant search for more planets like Earth that they can continue their work, or are these the only 3 planets they're ever going to work with? Or
they say that, well, of course, there's an infinite number of galaxies out there, and there's an infinite number of planets and civilizations out there, and they tell us that they have commercial and political and economic relations with many civilizations, many other civilizations. They are part of an intergalactic civilization, just like Star Trek or whatever, all these space movies that you're all familiar with. So they have intergalactic civilizations and relationships that they're in contact with and they know very well. And they're waiting for us also to develop and evolve enough to first overcome our own aggression on this planet, to show wisdom that, yes, we do deserve to be part of that civilization as well. It's kind of like Eastern European countries, that they're not allowed to join the European Union until they show that they've evolved enough in economics, in political sense, in human rights, etc. The same thing with us on this planet. We have to evolve. We have to show that, yes, first we can take care of our own problems. We can have a world government, a world currency. We can all live in peace and harmony. There is enough food and housing and everything for everybody on this planet. And so we overcome our aggression and of war. And then we connect, we become part of that intergalactic civilization. Regarding the 3 worlds, they created first, the first life that they created life on the planet Earth. That is the planet they first came to and created the life here first. And it was just an experiment first. They were not trying to create a civilization, the whole planet. There were just scientists experimenting with animals and butterflies and birds and flowers, etc., and eventually monkeys and humans. But then they realized that they were created the same way, so they said, okay, these are like our children. We have to let them grow and evolve. And then after that, they tell us that they went to 2 other planets and created life there as well. And in a sense, we are in a competition, in a sense that who deserves to receive the inheritance, the scientific and technological advances that Elohim have reached, who would that they give it to? Of course, they would give it to the planet who is the wisest, who is the smartest, and who is has the most peace and love. But first, they show that they are going to use that science and technology for peaceful means to let humanity evolve. Of course, they're not going to give it to the planet that's violent. And that's part of the mission of Ra'el as well. They gave Ra'el this mission to bring peace and harmony to this planet, which is full of violence and aggression. And if humanity shows that it deserves the inheritance, then we learn to empower the United Nations or our world government. We will have one world, one currency, one language. And then we show that, yes, we do deserve their scientific inheritance.
Well, you know, it appears to me that at least we as Earthlings, that we're
we are undergoing an evolutionary change here on Earth. I mean, the race is changing, and I think you feel that way as well. What I guess my case here is that we're kind of at a juxtaposition where a portion of our planet is ready to evolve to the next state of consciousness, to this ability to let go of the material goods, all the toys that we feel so compelled to collect in our lifetime, and billions of dollars and all of the control that goes with it. And yet, you know, most of the planet, it appears, is not ready to let go of that. How closely are they going to work with us in trying to raise the consciousness of the rest of the planet that there's more to this existence and this genetic development than meets the eye?
You are absolutely right that we are at the juxtaposition. And I would dare to say that even the majority of people on the earth are ready. The problem is the political system. The political system that we have on the planet is very primitive. And, of course, we are structured and organized around our political system, the power structure on the planet, the countries and the borders and the divisions that have been artificially created for power and wealth, etc. And I think we are going the right direction because science and technology is progressing. Nobody can stop that. And they have facilitated our lives. They have made life easier on this planet, providing plentiful of food for most of the people, and it can feed the whole planet, including Africa and India and all the poor nations. There is enough technology and means to feed everybody and to create a decent life for everybody. It's just a political system that is wrong. And the transforming changes that we see right now on the planet, they are going to force our political structures on the planet, like we see the financial crisis and all that will continue, and forces countries and nations and the presidents to start thinking and working with other countries more closely. All these forces led to the breakdown of the Soviet Union. Eastern Europe became free. The European Union created because they found out they have to work together to have more economic and political power. They were fighting the World War just not long ago in Europe, the First World War and the Second World War, and now they have the European Union. They know they have to work together. And these forces, I believe, they're going to continue in Southeast Asia. They have their own union. In America, South American countries, they're getting together. So these transformations will evolve, and we will have the political structure if the leaders that we choose, again, it's up to us, the leaders we choose are wise and they work for the betterment of humanity, then we will reach that state that we can have a world government and all work toward that progress that make things move a lot faster. And just think about it, about the internet that we have facilitated things so much. Things happen much faster right now, and the speed is going to continue even further. Science and technology always progress in an exponential manner. So in the next 10, 20 years are going to be quite fascinating, even though it's going to be challenging in many respects, whether it's economics or finance, etc. But in this crisis, there's always the opportunities that goes with it.
You know, we, as human beings, as individuals, in our imaginations, in our meditations, we can envision the smallest quanta. We can imagine the creation of planets and how things come together. We have an amazing ability to spiritually create things. How do we, in this world, create this vision physically that you're speaking about? What can we do to make it a physical reality?
That's an excellent question. It starts with the individual. Yes, everything that we talked about so far, we are talking about an overview on a global level, what things need to change or what things are happening at a global level. But yes, as individuals, we are responsible, and we have a big role to play in this progress and evolvement. And our personal responsibilities, as Ricky said in the first hour, is to be happy. It's really important for us to show that we enjoy our life, we are happy, we enjoy our life. Every day that we wake up is an opportunity to take pleasure in everything that life offers us, whether it's food, whether it's the blue sky and the deep clouds moving, whether it's the birds singing, our interactions with each other. We smile at each other, we're kind and caring for each other. So it all starts with us, all within our own circle of people that we know, our friends, our neighbors, the people we interact with at work. Our responsibility starts with that. First of all, we have to take care of ourselves. We have to make sure we are healthy, we have a healthy diet, and there are a few recommendations in Ra'el's teachings in the book. That, of course, those people who are interested can go into details. For example, we're not created to smoke. We're not created to get drunk every Friday night and think that we are having a good time. To have pleasure and enjoyment, we have everything in our own body, in our genetic code. So by just following a few simple instructions about our diet and our lifestyle, we can live a much more energetic life, a much healthier life, and feel good about ourselves first, and then we can hand that to our circle of friends and people who we can influence and interact with on a daily basis. And once we do that, there are like 70, 80,000 Ra'elians on the planet who are doing this. We are not the only ones. There are other people as part of quote-unquote New Age movement who are thinking, well, become open to these ideas of taking care of ourselves, being happy, smiling at each other, spreading love and kindness and brotherhood. And it starts with us. And our responsibility starts right there with ourselves and our circle of friends. And more people see us like that, they say, oh, I'd like to be like them too. Because unfortunately in the media, all the news is all the aggression and violence and killing and jealousy and anger. All these negativity people are bombarded with on a daily basis, and we don't need to be influenced by them. We don't need to expose ourselves to that. We need to take care of our, not only the kind of food we eat, but also the kind of programs we listen to and watch on TV. If they are negative, if they're making us angry or upset, we can stop exposing ourselves to it. I mean, instead exposing ourselves to positive things and interacting with people who are happy and friendly and energetic, because we influence each other on a circular manner, and we can choose who to be influenced by. And once we are happy, we influence the people around us in a positive way, and that wave with grow and accelerate on the planet, and the planet becomes peaceful.
You mentioned the New Age movement, and I just want to maybe bring in everybody that has had an out-of-body experience or has reached out, you know, beyond the physical and realized that they came back with all knowledge. They know everything there is to know out there in the universe. And then when they pop back into their mortal body, they realize they're hampered with lack of knowledge. And, you know, maybe there's repeat visits or there's reflection upon that experience, but what happens is we physically try to come up to that level of understanding, that level of knowledge, and then you're right, all this violence and greed and even the lust after the physical things of this planet go away. But that being said, the whole civilization isn't doing that, and there are glimpses, little flashes of greater capabilities in the human spirit than people can imagine. How do we, in the Ra'elian movement, how do you bring those to the forefront so that people begin concentrating on the right goals and the right understanding of who they are and what their capabilities are?
Okay. Very good point. I personally believe that we have the made great progress in that respect as well. In the number of people, number of programs that talk about this, number of books that have been written, number of internet sites that are now quote-unquote New Age, but talking about love and brotherhood. And people are attracted to different angles of this movement. Some people follow Ra'el, some people may follow a Buddhist tradition. Some people may follow a yogi tradition. There's so many of them, and a lot of can talk about peace and brotherhood, and it doesn't matter really which one you follow, as long as you understand that the foundation is peace and love and brotherhood. In terms of your first part of question, that they may feel connected to the instinct. I think it's probably a question of vocabulary that we use. We say we feel connected to infinity, and of course when you feel connected with infinity, you really feel that you know everything, or there's nothing that you need to know. It's already part of you. You feel that it's part of you. You're connected with the infinite intelligence and infinite knowledge that is out there. And again, that's one of the goals of the meditation, that if you're constantly connected to that, and then when we come back to the planet and we see, oh, there are all the problems, and maybe my friend is not happy and calls me and complains and whines all the time. But if you are really grounded in this the foundation of love and brotherhood, then you feel responsible as well. When you come back, you say, okay, I feel it. It feels wonderful, and it's my. I would like to bring this teaching and this state of peace and harmony that I feel to other people. So I tell my friends that, no, if you do these things, you become healthier and happier. You don't think as negative. Some people identify themselves and their personality with that negativity. And so if you take that away from them, then they kind of feel that they don't exist anymore. They've done it all their life, and they may want to continue. And that's fine. You just have to let them be, and they may evolve in their own time. We don't need to rush them. We provide them the advice and the feedback. If they're ready for it, if they've reached that level of wisdom, they will take their lesson and they improve their life. If not, that's fine too. There's so many of us, we can move on to the next person to teach. But again, how Hawaiians approach this is by starting with themselves, by making sure that I am happy, I enjoy my life. Because then people realize it when they interact with me, when they talk to me, they feel that I'm genuinely happy. I am really enjoying my life. I love to live forever. I love to live another lifetime if I can. And they feel that positive energy in you, and that motivates them to also to grasp some of that. And they may show some curiosity, say, okay, how come you're so happy always and smiling and positive? Then introduce them to the book, and this is something we also go through at the seminars and the workshops. We invite them to come and see and listen. There's no obligations. You don't become part of a cult or anything. You just come and see and explore for yourself, and if you want, you can take it further.
You know, one of the things that is maybe it's a little frustrating is to look at the dilemma of our governments and our economy and how we struggle with old technology. We're still burning oil, for crying out loud. How can we find a solution to our current dilemma through science? And I want to add another question on top of that, because I know a lot of engineers and a lot of scientists who have brilliant ideas about energy and conservation and biological balance, but they don't have two dimes to rub together. So how do we get enough resources in place so that this kind of science and engineering can have an effect on the way we use and exist on our planet?
Mm-hmm. Right. You see, absolutely right again. We have all the technology. We have all the brains and all the intelligence and all the expertise right here on the planet to solve all these problems. Again, the problem goes with the political system, the economic and political system, the structure we have, companies and that all work for profit. They're looking for their bottom line. They just want to increase the money that they take at the end of the year. That's the motivation of all these companies, and they hire thousands and thousands of scientists and PhD people and best brain. They give them a salary and they take advantage of all their work. And again, Elohim also says very clearly in their message that this system has been structured in the wrong way. As part of our political system, our technological and companies' the commercial state of our economy. And that is all wrong, and we have to realize that it's not working. And I think, fortunately, with this financial crisis, we are beginning to see the beginning of that yes, it didn't work. It was a capitalist country, and now government is buying the banks and all that overnight. So from capitalism overnight, it became almost a socialist country. And so the market forces, the political forces, I believe these are going to push us to rethink our structures, our political structures, our commercial structures, and it becomes a matter of survival. Really, if we want to survive as a humanity on this planet, we need to change our ways. And I think it is coming at a very fast pace, actually. And we don't need to be impatient anymore. We just actually, all we have to do is to raise awareness. And I think a program like yourself, yours on the internet, is a wonderful addition to that. To bring this information to the public and to stress that this is the only way. Now it's becoming a matter of survival. Do we want to live together? It's only one planet, it's one boat, we're all on the same boat, and we all have to live in peace and harmony together, and the only way is to change the structure of our political and commercial system, and not say only us, only this country, only this nation is our needs come first before anybody else. No, we all have to work together, and I think we are rapidly reaching that conclusion at the highest levels of government. So I see the positive change coming.
Well, we certainly have heard the rhetoric that change is coming, and you know that we now have a government in place that is all about change. What that means, I have no idea. But
I was not referring, of course, to Obama's presidency, although it is part of it, but he's not thinking on a global level. Again, he's saying that U.S. interests first and his government first, but very rapidly even the U.S. is realizing that we are not the only superpower anymore. Very soon, it's not going even to be the richest country on the planet anymore. China is going to take it over in 2012 or whatever
sure.
it is. So
sure.
Very soon our politicians need to open their eyes and see the reality.
I totally agree with you. We have been working with the U.S. government now for 12 years, and we just made our first deal with the Chinese because they're the ones that really want electric vehicles. So the manufacturing facility is going to be Chinese. Now, we'll build them here in the U.S., but no U.S. companies were interested, and there was no U.S. money available to help us. So I guess I do have one more question. Have we actually reached the age of apocalypse, according to the Elohim?
Yes, we reached the age of apocalypse in 1945, and August 6th, 1945, when the atomic bomb exploded in Hiroshima. Because that was the time that Elohim said, okay, human technology has progressed enough that humanity may destroy itself on this planet. And the only thing that would prevent that is humanity's dumb and love as a foundation to overcome, to misuse the science and technology. So at that time, Elohim decided to send the last prophet to us, who was born in 1946. And they contacted him in 1973, and they gave him the message of revelation. And apocalypse, that's what apocalypse means. It means revelation in Greek. It doesn't mean destruction. It means revelation. So this is the age of revelation. The truth is revealed, who we are, where we come from, why do we live, what is the purpose of life. All those things have been revealed in the message of the Elohim, given to Royal. And it's now freely available on our website, royal.org.
Well, that I'm not in disagreement with that we're in the age of apocalypse. That's certainly the ultimate act of hatred against the planet and against humanity was the use of nuclear weapons, and it saddens me that the only nation that stands for freedom and liberty and democracy at that time was the first to use it, and actually the only one to use it in warfare.
It's a sad blight upon humanity, and hopefully we have overcome that. This is an amazing planet, don't you agree?
Absolutely. It's really a privilege to be alive on this planet. Just to have an opportunity to be alive is such a great privilege, and I can't just get over it. Every day I wake up, it's amazing to see the flowers, the birds, there's oxygen to breathe, there's water to drink. Everything we need is right here, and it's just fantastic. Okay, we have a few problems, and we're going to get over it, but first, we realize that life is so fantastic, and it's amazing to be here, and I just want to run out there and tell everybody, it's just amazing. Don't be unhappy, don't be depressed over simple things. Just enjoy your life, and any problems you have, you can solve, because we are intelligent beings. Any problems we encounter at a personal level, we can overcome it. And when we overcome our own personal levels, then as a society, we can also overcome the bigger problems of the society.
Do the Elohim feel the amazing awakening that's taking place on this world right now?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do, and they are just as excited as we are to make the contact, because that was the goal. That's why they contacted their Ra'el, their prophet, in 1973 to give him this message, because they asked him to prepare the way, and Ra'el has been working on it for 35 years non-stop now, and it's amazing what he has done. He's traveled across the planet, he's gone to so many countries, established a movement in 85 countries, maybe more. He translated the messages in so many languages, and all of this has been done by volunteer people. I mean, nobody in the movement gets paid. We realize that this is a beautiful message. We read it, we understand it, and we say, yes, we want to help him. We want to spread this beautiful message. And that's what he's been doing for 35 years, preparing the way. And very soon we will see our creators on this planet.
I like the sound of that. You know, I'm kind of reminded of the words of Haggai. You know, not many people read Haggai, but he said, "Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes." How can we apply our labors and our thoughts to lay up treasures that are lasting and fulfilling?
By spreading love. Because the greatest treasure, and the greatest treasure that probably not enough of as the planet right now, is love. The more love we give, the more enriched we become ourselves, and the more we enrich the humanity. Love really should be the currency between people. The more love you give, the more you smile, the more you are caring and listen to people. And giving love is not expensive. It doesn't have to take time. It doesn't have to be cumbersome. It's very easy. And it's very free. And the more you give of it, the more it comes back to yourself. And that's what enriches us in our personal life, and that's what enriches humanity. And it is everlasting. Gold and coin and treasure, you cannot take it even. You die, it doesn't last. Nobody even realizes how much money you had after one or two generations. But your love spreads like a wave among humanity in the minds of people that you know, and that is what will last forever. And just as an example of that, if, for example, Jesus did not come here on earth to talk about love 2,000 years ago, we may have had a lot more aggression and war. If there were Christians who talked about love and love, of course, there were also fights and wars, but it was the essence of love. We need love to grow. We need love to be happy. And I think that's the greatest treasure of all.
You know, I couldn't agree more. Even $1 billion, it appears, in a single man's lifetime is not enough money to provide you the kind of security that you can get by just spending love with one another.
Right. And which one is more meaningful also to your life? You can have $1 billion, buy 5 houses and 3 cars and 2 planes and all that, but you can be in all these 5 houses, move from one to another, but not be happy, because you never gave love. But when you give love, you feel happy, because and our beloved Prophet Joel says that, that a brain that does not have love is not a healthy brain. It's a sick brain. We are happy when we feel love, when we give love. Anything else besides that, we don't need anything else to be happy. Just being alive and feeling the love and giving love make us happy. And not that money is bad. Money is not bad. It's good to have to work and get money and have a comfortable life, even a luxurious life, if that's what we want. But that's not the foundation. That's not the essence. The essence is love and kindness.
You know, I would caution people not to concentrate on the money. I have a good friend, and I asked him, you know, what is your dream? And he said, I want to have $1 million. And I said, why? He said, well, I want to move my family from the Philippines to the U.S. I want to put my son through college, and I don't want to worry about where my next meal's coming from. And I said, well, you see, you just came up with your own answer. You don't need $1 million. What you need to do is move your family from the Philippines to here, put your son in college, and not worry about where your next meal's coming from. $1 million might not be the way to do that.
Yeah, very good. Exactly. That's a very excellent point. That, and it goes with everything in life that we say, oh, I'll be happy when I have this. I'll be happy when I move there. I will be happy when I take that vacation. It's not true. You are happy now. You have to learn to be happy right now, here, today, in this present moment. And every day that you wake up, if you develop that in yourself, that I'm happy now, I'm enjoying my life, then you can reach all your goals after that.
I think we're getting there. Are we nearing another great influx from the Elohim that will break the bounds of space and allow us to rejoin the galactic community?
I think they're helping us in multiple ways. Of course, they gave the message to Royal to spread, and they're waiting to see what we do, but they're also helping us in many respects. There are more and more UFO sightings. There are the crop circles. People are starting to ask questions. If you ask people 20 years ago, if you believe there's life on other planets, I think only 20% of people said maybe. Today, I think 75% of people say yes, there is life on other planets. So that shows that the level of consciousness of humanity has progressed in the last 20 years, from 20% to 75%, and very soon it's going to be 95%. So the level of consciousness of humanity is evolving every year. And Elohim do help us with other means also, not just through the messages, but also other ways. And it is also in the Bible that there will be more signs in the sky. That is, they will show themselves more and more often. And when eventually we're ready, we build the embassy and they officially come here and we actually see them face to face.
Interesting. Interesting. Dr. Sam, I have time for one more question. And it's kind of an odd question because you mentioned the Bible. In the Bible it says, you know, in the last days there'll be false prophets. But, you know, that part was written in Greek. And what it says to me, it doesn't say that in the last day there will be no prophets. It means there will be prophets in the last days. But who are the false prophets of the last days?
Oh, there are so many of them. They're everywhere. When you turn your TV on, you see so many false prophets. The false prophets are the ones who say greed is good. Like people write books that greed is good. Go out there, and they're trying to teach people, right? When you write a book and you make money from it and tell people greed is good, go out there and struggle and make money, that's a false prophet. When they say it's the struggle, the survival of the fittest, when you believe in evolutionary mechanisms in the first place, and then evolutionary mechanisms in society, that yes, only the fittest survive. You have to go there and fight your way and eliminate all your enemies and get your way by military. These are false prophets. These are all wrong. These are giving us the wrong teachings, and unfortunately there are so many of them. The truth is the totally opposite of that. All these gurus of money and wealth and everything for myself, these are all false prophets, and you see them in all aspects of life.
Well, there's one more I'd like to mention. The next time you walk through the airport or the bus station or you near your nearest high school, you'll notice posters on the wall glorifying joining the military, jumping out of helicopters, driving in tanks, sitting on... And, you know,
all you really need to do is look at everything that's in the picture. Yes, you see a young man with a smile on his face, but he's holding a gun, and he's going to kill someone. That is false.
Yeah, you were so right on. That's the best one, actually. A false prophet. That's common. Fight for your country. It's your country. You have to fight for it and kill people. It's totally wrong. That's the greatest falsehood and false prophethood of all time. You have to die for your country. No, we are here to enjoy life and it's pleasure. There's only one country, planet Earth, and we're all from this planet, and we can all live in peace together on this planet. And you put your finger on a great one.
Well, there you have it, Earth Explorers. Next time they throw a war, don't show up.
I don't show the body bags that come back.
Yeah, exactly. Who is the father of Jesus?
The father of Jesus is also Yahweh. He's the president of the Elohim, and he's also the father of Ra'el. So I'm revealing something which it is in the messages, but not many people know. So in fact, Ra'el and Jesus are brothers of the same father.
Excellent story. Excellent. I like it so much. Dr. Sam, we're out of time, but it's been a marvelous visit, and I want you to come back sometime.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be my pleasure, and this was my pleasure, truly.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for appearing on X Squared Radio, Dr.
Thank
Sam.
Thank you. I was so happy. Thank you for your wonderful program. Have a good night.
Thank you very much. Good night. There you have it, Earth Explorers. March 1st, 2009, third hour, X Squared Radio, the Raelian Movement. If you missed any of this, you might want to go back and listen. Some very poignant questions and answers. We'll see you next week, right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people, help it to grow a little every day, and before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying peace, Earth Explorers. Excellent work, Don. Excellent work.